Previously on the audio files.
Coming up in a couple of days, James McCartney, the 50-ish son of Paul McCartney, is releasing another album, and a single has dropped. The song is called Beautiful.
Beautiful for being my baby. Beautiful.
I just have one thing to say. Shame on us for thinking Sean Lennon was the least talented of all the Beatles kids.
You know what it sounds like?
Shit.
Chins up, boobs out. It's showtime.
Time for music.
Civilized conversation.
Wherever the music takes me, kitten.
Scott Edward Phelps.
Ah, yes, the legendary wit, or at least half of it.
Dave Simmons.
Good evening, Dave.
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Tell you right out, I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to...
The most important music show ever.
Cue inspirational music.
The Audio Files.
Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
Katie, beautiful Katie. You're the only girl that I adore.
Well, I am.
Springtime for.
Don't hold back.
Hey, love, has only got one bone.
They're coming to take me away.
To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time.
That silly song is driving me crazy.
And a whole lot more silly songs coming your way on this edition of the Audio Files. More unique, dare we say, weird music, because we're going to commemorate something unusual occurring right now as we speak. It's leap year, and along with that, this week, Queen Bee continues her quest to become Yeehaw. Always remember, it could be worse. You could live in one of the five most depressing towns in America. We'll divulge the depressing. We got new music this week from a Straits man, wah-wah. We got some from a British rock legend who played behind George Harrison in more ways than one. And a country pop legend who isn't letting a little thing like being dead stop him from being up on the new release list. And, as mentioned, we're going to observe that once every 4 years thing that isn't election day, so it'll actually be fun to observe it. All that, and Dave's going to offer up what cymbals, drums, energy drinks, and green sticks with their name on them all have in common. But first up, the Fab Four and Phineas and his sister. It's the latest news at the top of the charts.
On the top of the charts.
The Audio Files.
All right, cats and kitties, we got major movie music news involving the Fab Four Mop Tops from Liverpool. Them boys have got some potential. But to get you all tingly and in the spirit and a little backstory, we're going to present for you the entire musical history of Beatle movies in a record-setting 57 seconds.
It's been a hard just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
I gotta tell you, the news that came out this week in the entertainment industry regarding the Fab Four boys, I'll be honest with you, mixed feelings on my part. Sam Mendes, the Oscar-winning director of such films as 1917, American Beauty, the one with Kevin Spacey, and the movie that a lot of people consider the best Daniel Craig Bond movie, Skyfall, announced this past week he's going to be making four different movies about the Beatles over the coming 2 years, with each told from one of the band members' points of view. The official statement says the films will intersect to tell the astonishing story of the greatest band in history. Paul's in on it. Ringo's in on it. John and George's family have all, they've all backed the project, and they've given all the music rights to Sam Mendes, which is the first time that's ever happened for a scripted Beatles movie. All, and then, of course, the hype comes along behind it. Mendez in an interview says, I'm honored to be telling the story and the blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you this. Let me tell you real quick my 2 cents here. I was the Beatle boy. I've said this before. They were my guys.
They were your guys, for sure.
I got my first little acoustic guitar because of the Ed Sullivan Show. Started writing songs. Pissed away any chance of a lucrative life. So I feel like I'm that guy that I can say I love them, and then at the same time I can say what I'm about to say. I'm starting to get the feeling with the Beatles, and it's not their fault because half of them are dead, but I'm starting to get the feeling like I've been having for quite a while about Elvis. It's the Elvis movie. It's the Elvis movie of the month. It's the Priscilla movie. It's the Priscilla movie of the month. Now we're going to do 4 more movies, each one from the Beatles, and it's not a documentary. These are supposedly, I don't know what the construction of this thing is, but here's my thinking on this at the core of it. This year, 2024, is the 60th anniversary of them appearing in America for the very first time.
Yes.
What in God's name has not been talked about, covered, filmed, documented, mentioned, played, replayed, and replayed in 60 years that could possibly lend itself to anything other than just, and the one I'll answer my own question, except to say that very young people, I guess, maybe, would not know as much about them as I do or as we do in our generations. Yeah. But it just seems like, for the love of God,
but
man.
But see, that becomes dangerous because then if the movie is not accurate, then that version of the Beatles and their lives from this point forward.
Let's just say 3 words. Oliver Stone, JFK.
Yes. So that's kind of that's what you have to really watch out. Hopefully Sam Mendes, I mean,
I got nothing but respect for the guy.
I thought 1917 was like a single shot for the entire movie.
Yep.
Which was phenomenal.
Yep. And I agree with the contention that Skyfall is the best of the Daniel Craig Bond movies.
I do too.
And American Beauty was really an amazing piece of work. And he was married to and got to hit on Kate Winslet. So, well, you know, all of that combined. So it's not about him. Yeah, it's just about the idea.
I hope he stays accurate.
Well, you know what?
As he can.
Sam, you know what I mean? We know you listen. Sam, we're going to be right there over your shoulder every step of the way, pal. Don't fuck this up. That's all I'm saying.
That is true. That is true.
All right. The other big news, and I know Dave's going to be excited about this. Billie Eilish Instagram this week, quote, "My album is mastered," unquote. First of all, because I don't follow her that closely. Her previous album was called, because here's the blurb that I saw when I cut and pasted this. Billie Eilish's follow-up to her previous album, Happier Than Ever, could be arriving soon, as she revealed on Instagram. Can you think of anything funnier than a Billie Eilish album named Happier Than Ever? Because you know she's just a bubbling, go-getting kind of chick. What was that made for?
God, I wish that whisper singing would go away.
No, that's a whole thing. It's angst. Yeah. You know, in our day, it was angst, but at least it had some passion and emotion behind it.
And then even, at least with Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, the angst was like, it was like banging your head against the wall, and that was kind of cool.
I will say this, though, about the stuff we talk about Billy almost weekly. We've kind of helped out ourselves a little bit, because now people have become familiar with what we do. And at this moment in this podcast, I promise you there are a number of people listening, and especially if a couple of people happen to be listening together simultaneously, one is turning to the other and saying, "What are you listening to?" They're going, "The audio files." "Are you sure?" "Yeah, because they're bitching on Billy again." So it must be about 7 minutes into the program. But here's the thing. Dave and I wandered through the break room this morning, and lo and behold, Billy and Phineas were down there, and they were looking for donuts. And we said, "Dudes, do that. This used to be a radio station." There's never any donuts in a radio station. No. They don't survive past showing up in the box. But we took the opportunity to ask them if the rumors were true that Phineas and Billy were interested in doing a full-blown musical for either the stage or screen or both. And we got them to answer the question.
Woo!
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Phineas has really, really good ideas for musicals already, and I'm so excited to see where they go. I'm very excited. Yeah!
No Tourette's there. She's fine.
Yeah, she's got a lot more energy there than she does singing.
Well, she's been on an award-winning bent, and she autographed that lady's forehead at the SAG Awards, and it's on. I just can't. Well, you know what, though? I'm just going to tell you, this is an exclusive from our program right here. We actually then found out where their little rehearsal room was. we snuck in there and we secretly recorded a snippet of the stuff that Phineas is working on with her for this groundbreaking new work, full-fledged musical, either for the stage or for the screen. Check this out.
What was I made for? There's just no time to die.
I mean, this is new territory.
Well, yeah, it sounds exactly like the old territory.
Oh, I couldn't be more excited. What do you think about it, Hal?
Hi, I'm Hal Blaine. Let's play drums. One, two.
Stephen Stills wrote it a long time ago. There's battle lines being drawn. Well, it's not quite that dramatic, but the pros and the antis are lining up on this business of Beyonce going all Yellowstone and shit. So we discussed that last week, which brings us around to this week's Last Week, This Week.
Last Week, This Week.
All right, Beyonce has become the first black woman in Beyonce has become the first black woman in modern music history to top the Billboard Hot Country chart with the single Texas Hold'em, which we have excerpted and featured over the last couple of weeks. The song also debuted at number 2 on the overall Hot 100, the actual pop Hot 100, just behind Jack Harlow's Lovin' On Me.
So she crossed over and crossed back.
And then all around, she's spinning it. Texas Hold'em dethroned Zach Bryan and Kacey Musgraves. The other country single, there's two on this album. One is called 16 Carriages. It debuted on the same chart at number 9. Check this out. We haven't played this. This is a little tiny excerpt of the other quote-unquote Beyonce country song. It's called 16 Carriages.
16 carriages driving away while I watch them ride with my dreams away to the summer sunset on a holy night on a long black road. All the tears I fight. 16 carriages driving away while I watch them ride with my dreams away to the summer sunset. Innocence was gone astray. Had to leave my home at an early age. I saw mama praying. I saw daddy grind. All my tender problems had to leave behind. It's been umpteen summers and I'm not in my bed. On the back of the bus in a bunk with the band. Going so hard, gotta choose myself. Underpaid and overwhelmed. I might cook clean but still won't fall. Still working on my life, you know. Only God knows, only God knows, only God knows. 16 carriages driving away while I watch them ride with my fears away into the summer sunset.
You know, I don't know what all the purists are griping about. That sounds like Patsy Cline to me.
Well, they crowbarred that pedal steel in there, you know.
Yeah. You know, when Shania Twain first hooked up with Mutt Lange and her first album with Mutt, The Woman in Me, which I was a big fan of and I championed at the time, I was still working for Tower Records, and that was when I got my opportunity to meet her because blah, blah, blah. And I liked what they did. But what I said was, when somebody was talking about her doing country music, I said, you know, what it is she's taken pop music, they've extracted the Farfisa keyboard and they've installed the steel guitar in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's that makes
pretty much
country.
It, yeah.
This stuff, and I know, here we go, besmirching Beyonce again, but that piece right there, that's not country music. That's not a country music song. It's got country lyrics if you can listen to them long enough to figure out what the hell she's talking
16
about.
16 carriages.
Yeah, with the little something about the bar, and I thought I heard the word hayride in there somewhere, but I can't what the hell she's doing. But I want to say something on her behalf. I will say this much. There's a pretty good, they're not raging because it's not that big a deal, but there is some debate going on online about whether this is legit. And you mentioned last week, and I've zeroed in on that because I'm of that school too. You used the phrase publicity stunt. I don't have any money to spare, but I'm willing to spare any money that I ain't got to bet you that her next album's not going to have any country on it.
No.
This is the flavor of the week. But that said, this isn't the first time. Country music, and this is an opinion, here's a mini editorial from somebody who lived and worked in Nashville for 20 years. And I consider myself a country music fan, but country music, not...
You mean traditional?
Well, and this is what I'm saying. I moved to Nashville in 75. That's the time that country music, as everybody knew country music up until then, and I'm talking the Patsy Cline's, but even further back, Ernest Tubb, Hank Cochran, Mr. Roy Acuff.
What year was the outlaw country guys, like Waylon and those guys?
That came along in the mid to late 70s.
After you moved there.
But that was kind of a hybrid. But what was happening in the mid 70s was something that we called, amongst ourselves, we called it country-politan. The traditional country music of the Wanda Jacksons and the George Jones, even in the traditional twangy country stuff, was starting to get shoved aside by what we call country-politan. Kenny Rogers had done Lucille, but he was starting to do Lionel Richie type songs. Lee Greenwood, who wrote God Bless the USA and was a country hit maker for several years after that, his very first hit on MCA Records was a song called Turns Me Inside Out. All right. This is what was considered country in 1975.
Loving you to me came easy. Now losing you will change my life, no doubt. In a way I'm glad it's over. In another way it turns me inside out.
So Greenwood's shtick was to steal a little Barry Gibb in the voice. Well, and if you take the guitar away and put a piano in its place, that's a pop ballad.
Right.
It's not a country song.
And that was, it wasn't long after that the Bee Gees started writing country songs. Islands in the Stream.
They wrote their pop songs with a country flavor.
Right.
So anyway, that's actually a way, by way of defending Beyonce. She's not the first one to come wandering into town and say, let's do this and that. But here's what's going on. And this is the thing that applies back to publicity stunt. All right. These are numbers I happened to cross. What's happening right now is just Urban Cowboy Part 2.
There you go.
When Urban Cowboy came along, everybody was wearing cowboy hats and everybody was going to line dance and everybody was wearing boots and jeans, boot cut jeans, and they were wearing bolo ties and they were down. Hell, I even went to one of those things, but I was drinking in those days. In the last 3 to 5 weeks with this Beyonce business, pictures have started surfacing. Kim Kardashian, Pharrell Williams, Diplo, Bella Hadid, among the other hipsters and influencers, all photographed wearing country. And this is
cowboy boots,
country cowboy hats, and other Western wear. Now let me inject there. Here's another thing for people who are uneducated: country Western music is Texas and points west.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Tennessee. It never was.
Right.
It was always called that by the pop music and the easy listening back in the 1940s. I like that country and Western music. You know, Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, that was country Western.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Country music was Wanda Jackson, Minnie Pearl in the comic sense, George Jones in the early years, Tammy Wynette. Country music. But now,
Roy Acuff.
Right, who's spinning in his grave faster than the law allows. He could power a nuclear reactor right now. Google searches in the past 2 weeks for cowboy boots and bolo ties have gone up by 160 and 560% respectively. Beyonce released her new singles, Texas Hold'em and 16 Candles. This came off the publicity sheet, I swear to God. In the mindset, even those hipsters who are trying to get into this thing subconsciously call it 16 candles instead of 16 carriages.
Yes.
Searches for cowboy hats jumped 200% after Beyonce's Verizon commercial during the Super Bowl. And she's been seen in cowboy hats several times recently. Once again, it's the fad. It's the phase. It's the flavor of the week. It's urban cowboy all over again.
Jay-Z is so savvy business-wise.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if he had not pre-worked out some sort of a deal with these cowboy hats.
Of course.
Bolo ties.
Of course. You know, the designer collection is imminent.
Yeah.
It's imminent.
Yeah, I can see that coming.
All right. That's enough ragging for 1 week. This week, it's leap year, so we thought we'd do something a little bit out of the ordinary, you know, even for us.
Scott Edward Phelps. Dave Simmons. The audio files.
I got it in the bedroom and I got it in the hall and I got it in the bedroom and you hung it on the wall. I got it with the buzz and I got it with the ring, and when you told me what my number was, I got a ding-a-ling, a singing. Hey baby, I'm your telephone and you just show me where you want it and I'll put it where I can. I could
Wikipedia defines it as a cover song, but also as a novelty song. A novelty song is exactly that. It's one designed to make you laugh or to make you go, hey, that's kind of weird, stuff of the ordinary. Right. And there are tons and tons and tons of them. We could do 6 shows of 5 hours each if we wanted to cover all the bases.
Yeah.
But just in commemoration of the fact that it's leap year, which only occurs every 4 years and is occurring this year, we thought we'd share some of those with you. That one, Telephone Man, was one of those out of nowhere, as a wise lady once said, yeah, it's one of those novelty songs that always sells 1.6 million copies on. I want to get in on that, man, because that's mm-hmm. the thing. She was some kind of Shantusi young hip pop singer who was trying to make a deal, couldn't get it going on, got this novelty record. It sold 2 million records. She made a few bucks. Then nothing after that happened for her.
Right.
She became either the director or assistant director of public schools in the in Atlanta, Georgia, Fulton
really?
County, Georgia.
And then, I didn't realize that.
And then tragically died fairly young in an automobile accident. But still, it was one of those songs that
right.
when you hear it, brings a smile to your face.
Yeah. Right. Memories.
I went through, since we were going to talk about novelty songs for a few minutes, I went through my extensive personal songwriting catalog and tried to find, remember, if I had ever specifically...
Did you ever write one?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'll asterisk that by saying this. I did write a couple of specialized things, a couple of Christmas songs. I've played one or two of those through the years. But they weren't novelty songs. They were just Christmas seasonal specifically, one about a kid... Kind of a knee-jerker or a tear-jerker, tear-jerker about a kid who...
little higher up.
Who's, oh, yeah, well, yeah. whose old man would turned out to be the drunk, but he was also Santa Claus, one of those kind of
right,
creepies.
Right.
But I did remember something, and this kills me. This is one of my regrets in life with having moved so many times. I don't have a copy of what I think would be defined as the one novelty song that I did write. Back around 1987 or 88, I can't remember what the hell was the main radio station in Nashville, Pop
WNBC.
NBC. They were promoting their radio station on television mm-hmm. by making fun of themselves. They were great commercials. It was self-deprecating. And the one commercial in particular that we all heard about and played for each other for weeks was one where this civilian guy, what he was he was a local lawyer. His name was Herschel, and I can't remember Herschel's last name. But he was like the big, schlubby, curly-haired Jewish, and I just say that for descriptive sake, who talked like was from New York. And the whole premise of it was he was on a stage by himself with a black background, and the camera's on him, and he's going, I like rock and roll and many of the easy-listening kinds of music, and I didn't like country music because it was so twangy, and they were always singing to their nose like this, and then it was one of those, you know, like stupid songs like, my baby drank herself to death, but I really like what I'm hearing on WWL radio,
right, right.
And you should listen to it, and it was a very successful TV campaign. A friend of mine who'd had numerous country hits, a songwriter by the name Eddie Burton, and I were sitting around, we were at the same publishing company for a while. And we had been talking about the commercial, and he said, you know what? We need to write that song. We need
to write
My Baby Drank Herself to Death. So we sat down, and we did. Our goal was to get it, write it, get somebody to demo it, do the demo for us, and then take it to the radio station where it was Jerry House was the name of the DJ who was the number one guy in town. And he would certainly get a kick out of it, play it. It'd be a big hit. We'd make a fortune.
Right.
That all never came to pass, but we did write the song. We did get the demo, and believe it or not, we were drinking in those days too. We had the foresight to pick up a phone and start making some calls. We actually got hold of Herschel at his law office and asked him if he would come over and sing the song. And he said, well, I'm not a singer. I can't sing no song. And we said, no, don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. So he did, but he kind of said sung it instead of sang it.
Right.
And it was spectacular. I can't find a copy of the demo. I'm still searching in boxes because it really turned out well.
That's too funny.
And all I remember is the chorus. My baby drank herself to death. My baby had liquor on her last breath. Now she's finally getting dry in that drunk tank in the sky. My baby drank herself to death. And we had the chorus, we had the whole guitar thing. That constitutes the novelty song. That's as close as
go.
I ever came.
There you go.
But as far as real novelty is concerned, Dave's got one and leads off with, all right, ready for this? A little Pharaoh tale.
Now when he was a young man, he never thought he'd see. tourism. Made of stoner.
There were so many great lines in that song.
My favorite was he gave his life for tourism. The context being that whole thing spawned as a Saturday Night Live sketch.
It premiered on Saturday Night Live in what at the time was one of the most expensive productions that Saturday Night Live had ever done.
Mm-hmm.
The song actually reached number 17 on the Billboard charts.
Sure, because you can always delightfully never account for taste in people.
Do you know who his background band was?
Booker T and the MGs.
No, they were called the Toot Uncommons, but it was the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, that's who it was. The great Jimmy Fadden on drums.
Yeah,
it's that one. I remember seeing that live on Saturday Night Live when I was a kid. You know, when in real time, I mean, that was one of those. I wasn't alive when the Beatles played, but I was alive when King Tut premiered.
It wears really well, too. You can find the video on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it was, he dresses up as Tut.
But they said Lorne Michaels, when they approached him, they thought he was going to say no, and he bought right into it. And thank God he did, because that probably is what put it up on the charts. People saw that on the.
You know, when all the documentation is done, when he finally retires and goes away, Lorne Michaels will ideally get the credit that he deserves. He always appeared to be kind of a stuffy shirt, but he was
a genius.
Well, this program is still on the air and it's been around 50 years. Okay. And it's had good years and bad years, but it's always been cutting edge.
They removed him at one point.
Yeah.
And had
Dick Ebersol.
And had to bring him back. You know? But that was fun. My favorite of all time is still the Larry David story.
Mm-hmm.
Which they turned into a Seinfeld episode where George quit the job.
Right.
And then just came back the next day and pretended it didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah. When Larry David was a writer on Saturday Night Live, he blew up and quit, went home and was talking to the real Kramer, and the real Kramer goes, just go back in on Monday and act like it never happened.
Never happened. Oh, that? Nah.
So Larry David said he went back and they were pitching ideas, and he said the guy that he screamed at and walked out on said, anybody got on any ideas? And Larry said, I got some.
There you go.
And the guy kind of looked at him and was like, okay, what you got? And it just acted like it never happened.
And the rest goes as it is. All right. My first one is of novelty, quote unquote, isn't one of your tip. And we said at the outset, there are billions and kabillions of these novelty songs, many of them familiar to people, especially contemporary. You got 70 or 80 albums by Weird Al. You've got all this kind of stuff. This is a little out of the ordinary, which is why I picked it just for fun. This was written by Peggy Lee, the singer from the 40s and 50s, who had the seminal version of the song Fever, among other things. And she and her husband at the day, Dave Barber, he was an orchestra leader, they wrote the song in 1947. They cut it with his orchestra. Capitol Records put it out. And believe it or not, the lady who did Fever, this became her biggest chart hit. For the week ending January 23rd, 1948, 21 weeks on the bestseller chart, which is what they called it in those days, and 9 weeks of it at number one. And all it was just a fun little thing about relaxation and not wanting to work.
The faucet, she is dripping, and the fence, she's fallen down. My pocket needs some money so I can go into town. My brother isn't working and my sister doesn't care. The car, she needs a motor so I can go anywhere.
Mañana, mañana, mañana is soon enough for me.
The window, she is broken and the rain is coming in. If someone doesn't fix it, I'll be soaking to my skin. But if we wait a day or two, the rain may go away. And we don't need a window on such a sunny day.
Mañana, mañana, mañana is enough for me.
Oba, oba.
Mañana, mañana, mañana is enough for me.
For those who don't speak the language, mañana is the Spanish word for tomorrow, although I'm told it also means morning, and the theme of the song, obviously. Does that melody ring a bell for you?
It does, but I can't place it.
Well, speaking of Seinfeld, that's the song that they played in the background in the during whatever episode it was where Newman and Kramer were in Jerry's apartment making the sausages.
Yes, yes.
And dancing
right.
around.
Yes, you are right.
I know. That's what I'm saying. There it is. And as you can imagine, the stereotypical Hispanic accents, got to remember this was 1948 before so many people had so many sticks of so many sizes up their ass about stuff like that, with a little Latin flavor to the backup band. But in Peggy Lee's autobiography, she emphasized that the song was just meant to be a happy-go-lucky sound. They wrote it. She and her husband wrote it while they were on vacation in Mexico. And in her autobio, she says she regrets, quote, that some listeners perceived it as cultural mockery. And I read that line and I went, you know, here we go. And I'm not going to do a rant. I'm just going to say this. And I started to say, we've lost. Fuck that. I'm fine with it. America has lost its ability to laugh at itself.
Exactly.
Self-deprecation. And here's the important distinction. Here's the mini editorial. Poking fun, teasing, that's part of the human experience. And I got an ego the size of New Hampshire, but I don't have any problem being poked. And Dave and I go back and forth.
wait a minute. You don't have any problem being poked?
I have no problem being poked. Even when you go there with that approach.
The visual is not pleasant.
But I got people who have experienced it and don't have any complaints. But here's my example. Because you and I have done it since the day we met. And it's you take it and it's fun and it's laughter, it's humor. It's about not taking yourself or all the shit in the world so seriously. But there is an important distinction to be had. There's a difference between teasing and poking, the funny kind of poking.
And bullying.
And bullying and ridiculing. And here's a difference, for example, very quickly. If Dave had stubbed his toe on the way in here and was walking a little bit less than his usual sprite-filled gait, I would look up and say, hey, limp along, how you doing? He would laugh, I would laugh, that'd be the end of it. If, however, for example, Dave was a reporter with a neurological disorder and was doing a story, and then I went on in front of a, say, you know, podium in front of 10,000 drooling people and went, that's not teasing. That's bullying, and it's bullshit. There's the difference. Yes. But these kinds of things, you know, I understand where the black people can be offended, I guess, by blackface and what they used to do in the old vaudeville shows.
Minstrel shows, yeah.
But nobody laughs at themselves anymore.
Mm-mm.
And
no.
Well, we do.
And that's why we love All in the Family and shows like In the Jeffersons, you know.
That shit would not get past episode two these days. And this, and we're supposed to be evolving, not de-evolving. That show, All in the Family, debuted in 1970, 54 years ago.
And Archie Bunker became the lovable bigot.
And there it is. What it did was it didn't make fun of people. It made fun of the people who make fun of people. I call that Randy Newman syndrome.
Yeah.
There was a big outcry when Randy Newman did Short People. People with a brain in their head know Randy Newman was not making fun of short people. He was ridiculing people who make fun of short people. But you got to have a brain to be able to think of that. Speaking of shaming, Dave's got a fun one known as a novelty song.
Your butt is wide, well, mine is too. Just watch your mouth, or I'll sit on you. The word is out, better treat me right. 'Cause I'm the king of cellulite. Ham on whole wheat. All right. But I never use the phone booth, and I never see my toes. When I'm going to the movies, take up seven rows because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, really, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. You know it, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, really, really you know fat. Don't you call me pudgy, portly, or stout. So tell me once again, who's fat? If you see me coming your way, better give me plenty space. If I tell you that I'm hungry, then won't you feed my face? Because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, really, really fat. You know I sit around the house. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, really, really fat. And the whole world knows I'm fat.
That's my favorite line in the song, The Little Aside. When I sit around the house, I really sit around the house.
Well, hold on a second. Let me take a sip of this excess energy drink before I...
Okay.
So refreshing. I got to pay the bills.
We've moved the plugs into the middle of the show now. Is that what's going on?
That was a parody song, but parody songs can be novelty songs as well.
Well, most often they are, sure.
The thing that I've always remembered that because of the video. And that video won the 1988 video Grammy.
Let me tell you my favorite. It's interesting you say that. While I was playing, I was reminded. Let me tell you my favorite part of that song. And in order to and I like the other lines, but there's a lot of clever stuff in there, as Weird Al does. But there's one moment in the video that always made me laugh out loud. And you have to have seen the original Michael Jackson video. It takes place in a subway station.
Yes.
And he's dancing with the, you know, whatever. But, and Weird Al's video matches it frame for frame.
Frame for frame.
That's the beauty of it. But he's doing the dance steps, and you have to be able to see the original video and then see what Al does. But he's moving his hands in the Michael Jackson ways. And you hear the sound effects, some of the percussion stuff, and especially the whip sound.
Yeah. Wah-tsh,
okay. Every time Michael Jackson does that little jerk move he used to do where he's shooting his hands out and it goes tsh, tsh, like he's doing the whip. When Al does it, he does it exactly the same way, except at one point after about the second time, it goes tsh, and he looks out at his hand and he stands there for just a split second and goes tsh, tsh, and it just because he can see that his hand is what's causing the noise. It's a stupid little thing, but it's hilarious.
My favorite part is when the Wesley Snipes character in the Michael Jackson, right, when he's talking to the guys in the beginning and they insult Al. He goes, "You ain't fat, you ain't nothing."
That's right.
"You ain't fat, you ain't nothing.
You ain't nothing."
But they said Michael Jackson was 100% all in with the Weird Al's.
See, even Michael Jackson could laugh at himself, and Michael Jackson had more issues than Carter has pills.
You mentioned the subways. Michael Jackson even allowed Weird Al access to the original sets that they used in the video.
There you go.
So, yeah, that's the video made that one of my favorites of all time.
We recommend it. Check it out. You can find it on YouTube. Ross Bagdasarian, we've talked about before, came to fame as a songwriter. He wrote Come On to My House, the Rosemary Clooney song that we've played every now and then back in the 1950s. But Bagdasarian's rise to prominence came with a song that he recorded in 1958. He bought a reel-to-reel tape deck for $200, which was about $2,000 in modern-day dollars, so it was something. And he fooled around with the little speed control that it had on it. And he created a little scenario where he was singing a line, and then he had a speeded-up voice singing along with him. They put the record out. It sold 1.5 million copies and went to number one on the Billboard charts and was the first time that any of us in those days had ever heard what we, well, tell you about that in a second.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
Now, as successful as the song was, there was absolutely no reference. He did record it under his stage name, David Seville, but there was absolutely no reference to Chipmunk or Chipmunks because that's not what it was. It was the Witch Doctor, and he used the speeded-up voice to do the voice of the Witch Doctor. But it became such a smash success that if at first you succeed, do it again.
And again.
So he came up with this idea for the Chipmunks, the three. He named the three, and he put out this record on Liberty Records, which was a subsidiary, I think, of Mercury at the time. He named the Chipmunks after three Liberty Records executives, Simon Waronker, Theodore Keep, and Alvin Bennett, because he was poking them in a good way. And that debut song, the one with the Chipmunks, was released in November of 1958, 4 million records historically, and has been listed by music archivists as the 23rd most performed Christmas song of the 20th century.
All right, you Chipmunks, ready to sing your song?
I'll say we are. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon.
Okay.
Okay, Theodore.
Okay.
Okay, Alvin. Alvin! Alvin!
Okay! Christmas, Christmas time is near. Time for toys and time for cheer.
That song, that record is now almost 70 years old.
Yeah.
And I can only speak for me because I was 7 years old when that record came out. It was just a wonderful, and to this day, with all the crap and all the stuff and all the things, it still evokes a charm, an innocence.
Well, it was a big song in the 70s, in my late 60s, early 70s in my childhood.
Because it's it's just fun. It's cheerful. There's no agenda. It's goofy, but it's not stupid.
And that's one of the cool things about Christmas songs, because if your Christmas song becomes a classic like that, it will live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because every Christmas they have those 30 to 35 standards, you know, White Christmas, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman.
Of course, the dark side of that is Mariah Carey, but we won't go down that road.
But yeah, that's, I mean, if you're a songwriter and you can manage to write one of those, life is good, man. Life is fucking good.
Yeah, let's work on that before December comes around. All right. There's new music in the hopper this week. It was We Ask and Answer. Hey, what's new?
What's up?
What's up?
What's all the hubbub?
The hubbub. Hey,
what's up?
Hubbub. Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits has got a new record out. I'm not going to say drop the single. He has released a single. Here's a little excerpt, and we'll talk about it. It's called Watch Me Gone.
There was a train leaving for a big beat in a big life. Are you coming? I may have asked you once or twice, but I'd already left the hallway with broken lights, some dingy landing we used to tumble from, where the stairs were cracked and worn. Whatever, watch me go, babe, watch me go. And I didn't know from a nothing, not even my own voice, but I knew there was something, and I knew there was no choice. I was leaving mostly heartache, but I was in no mood to rejoice. There was so much that was wrong. Whatever, watch me go, babe, watch me go.
Last week when we did the What's News, we played the new Billy Joel and we played the new Sheryl Crow, and I said the same thing about both songs, and I feel the same way about this. I like Mark Knopfler. I've always liked Dire Straits. He's got a new record out. Congratulations, Mark.
Yeah,
there's nothing going on here. But
I was never a Mark Knopfler fan. I know he's a great musician. I was never a Dire Straits fan, and none of that has changed. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's music that they should play. That's music to have the plug pulled on you. They should play that at hospitals. Watch Me Gone.
So from Simon and Dave, that's a no. You're not going to Hollywood. You know what? He didn't sound like himself at first to me.
He sounded like Bob Dylan.
There's a little Dylan in there. There's a little, if Leonard Cohen had been able to keep a tune. And there's a little bit of a deeper voice Eric Clapton in there, if you listen to the inflection of his syllabic approach and presentation. But once again, there's that. And speaking of Eric Clapton, the other new tune, Glenn Campbell's got an album coming out in April. It should be the last of the last, unless there's collector's item stuff that comes along later. But he and Clapton apparently duetted on this song, and it's, well, you know what, let's just...
Was this one of those After Death collaborations, like Natalie Cole?
I think the album is a series of duets. I think they were recorded before he passed away, but this is Glenn Campbell and Eric Clapton.
Nothing but the whole wide world to gain. Nothing, nothing. Nothing but the whole wide world to gain. Nothing, nothing. Got nothing but the whole wide world to gain. Now I'm here on the blacktop, the sun in my eyes. Women and country on my mind. Both turned me out, over the borderline. There's no more love lost, no more games, no more digging holes or graves. Nothing to lose but rivets and chains. Got nothing but the whole wide world to gain.
Now, there's certainly a poignancy involved because Glen Campbell's gone, and
yes,
that's one of
yes.
those kind of archival things. But I've got that same feeling again. It's nice. It's well done. It's accomplished, but it's Eric Clapton and Glen Campbell, but okay. It's a nice song. And next.
I love Glen Campbell. I really do.
He spoke highly of you too.
Well, thank you. You know, he was a good buddy.
I'm Glen Campbell.
No, he just, his entire career very underrated as a player, as mm-hmm. a singer. I guess the only thing he was really highly rated at was beating Tanya Tucker, but
but she liked it.
But no, she liked it.
She liked it.
No, I think I liked it.
You know who wrote the song?
Who?
I didn't know this. Jacob Dylan.
You know what? It does sound.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, it does sound like.
Ergo, therefore. But yeah.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah.
Fun facts to know and tell, available only on the audio files.
But yeah, that's all.
We're
awesome.
Not just about trashing Billie Eilish here. We're in for the really good thing. I liked it.
Yeah, I did like it. I liked
it. It's not going to race up the top of the charts.
No. But,
and it's kind of interesting to hear Eric Clapton singing high harmony to a melody. So it's got that stuff going on.
Plus, Glen Campbell was in True Grit.
Well, that alone.
That alone puts him on a pedestal.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, if it wasn't for Glen Campbell, there would have been no Smothers Brothers TV show.
Really?
The Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour was a summer replacement show, the first season it was on, as a summer replacement for the Glen Campbell Good Time Hour, which went on hiatus in the days. Well, you stick around, you live long enough, you learn everything. Ain't that some
Two guys who know tunes, talking tunes, the audio files.
I have a sad story to tell you. It may hurt your feelings a bit. Last night when I walked into my bathroom, I stepped in a big pile of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen.
Nobody knows more about hygiene than Dave when we say hey, Dave, each week.
Hey.
Dave Simmons.
Hey, Dave.
Hey. What you got? What's up?
Mm-hmm. Dave went on a little road trip, but not to worry, he's home. So you've been out campaigning and shaking hands, huh?
Yes, I have. Uh-huh. Yes. I appeared at the Delaware Drum Show this weekend in the Trinity Cymbals booth and met a lot of celebrity drummers who were there. You know, Keith Carlock, my good friend Bernard Purdy, Richie Scanella, Darren Metz.
And Jerry Mathers,
you know,
as the Beaver.
Darren Metz was there. He's got a wonderful project he's working on with he's sampling sounds at Bethlehem, the old Bethlehem Steel Factory.
Wow.
And he's doing a 10,000 sample pack for drummers. Mm-hmm. So really cool stuff, finding out met a lot of really nice people. Saw some new products. Bought this really cool, there's a leather manufacturer. He bought like a single pair of stick bag to put on your left hand, mm-hmm. like hang it from your hi-hat.
Okay.
You know, because you have your stick bag. If you drop your stick in your left hand, you have to switch hands, grab a stick.
I always thought the bag was on the left in the first place.
No, it's on the right.
No,
it's on your, hangs on your floor tile.
Well, I'm not a drummer, so I don't know.
So yeah, just really cool, innovative stuff, you know.
You mean it took all the way to 2024 for somebody to figure out to put the sticks on the left side instead of the right side? I mean, it's a breakthrough, but still, you'd think
that. Well, no, I mean, I've seen stick bags for the left-hand side,
right.
but these were hand-sewed leather. Almost looked like the little knife sleeves.
Yeah.
It really cool stuff.
I would think.
You know, there were some really cool vintage drum, like the Drum Addict was in the booth right across from us. I got a chance to do the Drum Key podcast. I sat in for about a 15-minute segment there. And that's run by a Lancaster, Pennsylvania drum shop called Drums Etc., which everybody I met there was top shelf people. I'd say there was 500-600 people wandering around most of the day. Bernard Purdy gave a clinic. Mike Zimbach gave a clinic. Keith Carlock.
That's pretty good for a regional drum show.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, everybody seemed to do really well. You know, we're an internet based company with, Trinity Cymbals. So we basically were giving out our affinity codes and, you know, those sales will start coming in within this next week.
Not to be confused now with the Da Vinci code.
Yes.
The affinity code.
The affinity code.
Explain what the affinity code is.
An affinity code. Well, that's what a lot of people are doing affinity marketing, for different, like for Amazon and things like that. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm an endorser. A certified Trinity artist. But what Robbie does with all of his artists, he gives each one an affinity code. So if you give that code to somebody, they buy something from Trinity Cymbals, mm-hmm. you get a commission, mm-hmm. which is a nice way to make some extra money.
Sure.
So that's a really cool setup. And that's, you know, that's basically why we do these shows, to promote the product line and also to promote, grow the product line, and then also make some pocket change.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a very, very good time. I met some really interesting young players, really young. You know, there were a couple kids. I mean, I was talking to one. He couldn't have been more than 11. He couldn't have been more than 11 years old. I was talking to him. He bought a pair of my drumsticks.
Everybody starts out young now.
Yeah, he bought a pair of the Dave Simmons Solo Beat Indonesian mm-hmm. drumsticks, walked across to the booth, sat down on a drum set and started wailing away. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I saw some reel of some 17-year-old girl in America's Got Talent from some months ago. And she was like fully accomplished. Her stage presentation was totally poised. So she'd obviously been doing it since she was a kid.
Yes.
I've also taken I'm taking online golf lessons from Charlie Woods, who's like, what is he, like 14? And what I'm finding is it's fascinating from a sociological point of view, but more than that, I'm resenting the hell out of it because my father's long gone, but I want to say to him, hey, mm-hmm. you know, how come you didn't put a fucking putter in my hand when I was 5 years old? Then I'd have $60 million in the bank.
Right.
Kids are just doing everything sooner.
Well, there's a duo from Lower Delaware, the Fitzky brothers, Alex and Drew, bass player and a drummer. Their parents brought them up. To see, they wanted to meet Bernard. So I introduced them to Bernard. And they've been playing with Melody Trucks, who's, Butch Trucks' daughter from the Allman Brothers.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So they've been, and Drew is 19 and Alex, I think, is 16. And those boys are just, they're accomplished and they're good players.
All right.
You know, so yeah, so it was a good day. Met a lot of people like that. Really enjoyed myself. You thoroughly enjoyed it.
Money and time well spent.
Thank you, Joe Meckler, for putting on the Delaware Drum Show.
All right, stay tuned. A little later in the show, Dave will be thanking all those people again. I haven't near name dropped enough to satisfy my quota, but I think we'll take care of that in 6 degrees.
6 degrees of SEP.
Short version of the story, and I've mentioned it before. Billy Strange, iconic producer, arranger, songwriter. I met him in 1976 when I was introduced to him. He had come to Nashville from his home base in L.A. He worked with the Sinatra family, Frank and Nancy and the gang. And Frank decided it in the mid-70s, countrypolitan becoming the new thing, that there might be some money to be made in publishing in Nashville. So he trusted Billy to come to Nashville and open up this little publishing house called Frank and Nancy Music. That's where I met him, Billy. In 1951... Frank Sinatra was in a CBS television special with a TV personality named Dagmar. Now, you can do the Google or Wiki on this thing, kids. It's kind of cool. Dagmar was, I remember this from childhood, she was kind of a cross between Janis Joplin, Rosemary Clooney, and Phyllis Diller, if you can mash that all together in your brain. She was a Chara without an accent, okay?
Was she a looker? Or?
Well, in the day.
Okay, because you said Phyllis Diller.
You know, threw me there. Well, no, because she had that. You know who she really looks like, and she's not quite as attractive as. Are you familiar with Ted Lasso?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hannah Waddingham, the one who plays the owner of the team. Yeah. Dagmar looked a little bit like Hannah Waddingham back in the day. But anyway, Frank Sinatra, 1951. They're in this TV show. Mitch Miller, who was the head of Columbia Records, liked the pairing, and he told one of his songwriters to write a song for the two of them, Sinatra and Dagmar. The result, and this is news to me, this is what's fun about researching these kinds of things when we do these little theme shows. The result was a song called Mama Will Bark, a song that was performed by Frank Sinatra with interspersed spoken statements by Dagmar saying things like, Mama will bark, Mama will spank, Papa will spank. You think I'm making this up, but I'm not. This is from Columbia Records in 1951. This is, in fact, Frank Sinatra and Dagmar.
My feet were killing me. My dogs were barking. I must have fallen asleep where I was parking. And then I dreamed two dogs were talking. Take my word. It was the doggonest thing you ever heard. She said,
Mama will bark.
You look so lovely in the moonlight.
Yes, but Papa will bark.
Your eyes are shining like the starlight.
Yes, but Mama will bark.
Your lips are so inviting, darling. Give me one more kiss.
Mama will spank.
The night is young and you are here so near.
But Papa will spank.
Please let me whisper in your ear, my dear.
But Mama will spank.
This is the moment I have dreamed of, darling. Oh, what a bliss.
So you're the Ed Dale that's been keeping me thought out late every night, huh? Well, take that and take that and take that. Hot dog, woof.
Now, not only does that have the distinction among music archivists of being the worst thing Frank Sinatra ever put on vinyl in any way, shape, or form, but you got animal cruelty at the end. Beating up the dogs. And you got Dagmar, who was a relatively effervescent personality, sounding like she was bored with the entire.
Did she actually sing, or did she just talk like that in all of her other songs? That was her.
I don't know. Well, I think she was I don't recall her being much of a vocalist, but still, even the added. Mama, it's like you can hear her almost reading it. Mama will bark. Papa will bark. Mama will spank.
Wow.
That qualifies as the end of the ultimate as far as novelty songs is concerned. All right, let's do 2 minutes and get the hell out of here.
And now.
So how long is this going to take?
2 minutes.
That's right. All right, big announcement, minor announcement. I've been talking about this for weeks. The memoir that I wrote some years ago called I've Never Heard of You Either has been being turned into a podcast/audiobook. And I'm here to tell you that the first episode will be available for your downloading delectation this coming Friday. And then in subsequent weeks, there'll be a new episode each week for it. It's ended up being 13 episodes. So we've played little excerpts from it to give you a little taste of what I'm doing. This one is from a very, one of the last few episodes, and it talks a little bit about the song that I've mentioned more times than not that I wrote with my Canadian co-writer friend Cyril Rawson that became a number one song in Canada in the early 1990s. And this just gives you a little flavor of what the audiobook podcast of I've never heard of you either will sound like. It's 2 minutes of the aforementioned.
Colleen Peterson, the lady who had done the vocal on our demo, was an accomplished and successful recording artist in her own right in her native Canada. At the moment, though, she was, in the jargon, between labels. What the hell, we thought. So we took the original demo, consisting of percussion, two very hip-moving acoustic guitars, and Colleen's lead and harmony vocals, cleaned it up a little in the mixing room, and released it as an independent label single in Canada. The whole idea was to have the song out there where potential hitmakers might hear it and come to their senses, while allowing Colleen to campaign for a new record deal while keeping her name out there.
I told myself I would not be moved by another man.
We failed on both counts. No one else expressed the slightest interest in recording the song. And Colleen didn't get offer one. She had a pretty good year, as it turned out, though. And we didn't do too bad either. The Judds Rejected, slightly cleaned up demo version of our song, No Pain, No Gain, as sung by Colleen Peterson, became, in August of that year, the number one single on the Canadian country music charts, and by year's end, it was selected as the number one Canadian country music single for the year, 1991. It was my first and last number one. It made me several thousand dollars, and it assured once and for all that my name would be available for future generations of Google searchers. It also convinced me that it was time to move on.
Is that a little teasing cliffhanger?
Yes, it is. We actually wrote the song with the Judds in mind because Winona and Naomi were very popular at the time. It was perfect for them. We pitched it to them. They passed on it, and that's the reason that Colleen's version ended up getting it. We were proud to have it, and it was nice to have a number one record in Canada and number one for the entire year. That said, had the Judds recorded it and had a hit with it, I'd be living in Malibu now, so there's that whole thing to go along with that. But still, it's called I've Never Heard of You Either, and the first episode is available wherever you find the audio files or the audio files, wherever it happens to be on your network servers. I think it's time for bye-bye.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Can you move it out of here?
Okay, wrap it up, kid.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The audio files.
In which we return to that magical, mystical land with the Dave. Dave lives in endorsement land.
Let me take one more sip of this watermelon lemonade excess energy drink.
What, you got a new flavor coming out or something? You're hyping the hell out of the energy drink this week.
That's actually my favorite.
Okay.
No, she was sending me another case. Thank you, Nia Cox, for everything you do for me at
Excess
Energy.
Does she have a pina colada flavor?
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, because watermelon don't do it for me. I'm just saying.
Robbie and Lynn, thanks for entrusting me with running the Delaware Drum Show. That was really cool. Trinity Cymbals is always so good to me. I really appreciate everything you guys do for me. Sam and Kevin, HHG, keep up the good work. You make the best drums on the market, hands down. I even got a couple drum manufacturers to admit that at the show.
Good.
So, and also Iowa at Solo Beat Drumsticks, which I completely sold out of at the Delaware Drum Show yesterday. So, yeah, thank you guys for all of your support. We really, really appreciate it. Dean and Dale from Earl T Music, Dover and Del Mar. Shop there quickly. Your life may depend on it. That's all I have to say.
And he knows the guy. So don't think he's
getting all I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, it's fine. They're fine quality items, Clark, so don't feel bashful about going after it. That's the way that goes. What was I going to say? Oh, this week also marks a very special occasion. It is leap year, February 29th. My wedding anniversary is on February 29th. My wife and I got married on February 29th in 2012. So although we've been married 12 years, it's only our fourth wedding anniversary.
Hey, that's a good way to go.
Well, it gets me off the hook for having to remember the thing only every 4 years, and I've managed to do that okay, so it works out really well.
Don't spend that much on anniversary gifts.
No, absolutely not. And here's a little record-setting thing. I'm going to mention it briefly, but for the very first time, in probably 62 weeks in a row, I think I'm not going to play an excerpt from Come Home to West Virginia. You're welcome. Thank you. Because you see, the whole trick in comedy is to know when to back off just a little while. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a standing ovation.
I like that.
Okay, that's it. That's good. You can sit down. Sit down now. All right, next week, I can't remember. We've moved around the theme three or four times. Taking us out, we're going to leave you with a little bit of a different outro in the sense it's going to be a little longer. Usually, as you know, we use a little music excerpt and we give you the little credit blurbs and we're out of there. Usually runs 35, 40 seconds. This one's going to run closer to 2 minutes, but the only reason is, as a novelty song, it's such a brilliantly written piece of work that it deserves for you to hear the whole thing just to have fun with it. If you know it, as soon as you hear it, you're going to go, oh, yeah. And if you've never heard it before, you're going to enjoy it. As they say, screw you in show business. Trust me. Okay.
And remember, that song and all the other music is available on our sister podcast.
The audio files. Just the music, all the music, as much music as you can stand. And this week, quite the eclectic collection with the novelty tunes and everything else. The Complete Telephone Man by Mary Wilson is on there.
Oh, wow.
With all the little double entendres and everything else.
Nice.
So enjoy that. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. You might hit a bump and spill it.
There you go.
I'm Scott Edward
Phillips. I'm Dave Simmons.
And we are the Audiophiles.
Well, the weather for the whole area will continue much the same as the past few days. Temperatures 17 centigrade, that's 49 Fahrenheit. Winds will freshen later tonight to southwest, force 6 or 7. And there will be showers, sometimes heavy in many... Oh, sod it. I don't want to be a weather forecaster. I don't want to rabbit on all day about sunny periods and patches of rain spreading from the west. I want it to be a lumberjack, leaping from tree to tree as they float down the mighty rivers of British Columbia. The giant redwood, the larch, the fir, the mighty Scots pine, the maidenhead creeping water plant, the naughty Leicestershire fleshy oak, the flatulent elm of West Ruislip, the Quercus Max.
The Audiophiles is produced in the United States of America. Questions, comments, and witty banter welcome. Audiophilesbroadcast@gmail.com.
We sing, sing, sing. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. Sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I skip and jump. I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars. I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa.
Files.